This week on Countdown to Infinity, we revisit a blonde Jon Snow as he battles a red-eyed Night King, tries to outsmart a magic Joffrey, and falls in love with a wildling who is actually Natalie Portman being a nerd. This is Countdown to Infinity, and this is Thor.
Let us go, we're going to review Frozen today. We're not, we're going to review Thor, but it's pretty much the same movie, apart from Elsa is ditched a red cape for red eyes. Welcome to Countdown to Infinity. It's me, David.
Me, Eamon.
And we're back. Yeah. Woo. So today we're talking about Kenneth Branagh's Thor.
So the introduction to Asgard, Thor, Loki, Odin.
As well as some wonderful moments between Jane Foster. We will talk about that, and it's absolutely fucking shit. So
it's pretty terrible.
First things first, we open, and this is the first time as Marvel fans we've seen this in the cinema. We open as a post-credit scene finishes in the same area, so we know we are very much where Iron Man 2 left off.
Yeah, it's firmly having its place in the MCU right from the get-go. So if you remember in Iron Man 2, the post-credit scene sees Phil Coulson stumble across the Hammer Mjolnir in New Mexico, and it opens with Natalie Portman crashing into Thor and knocking him to the ground.
It also features this wonderful Michael Bay moment in which Natalie Portman leans over Thor and the light smooths across her face. From the get-go, you're being told Natalie Portman, she's a love interest for Thor. Mm. Like, there is no messing around with it whatsoever.
There may as well be a Cupid arrow, like, between the two of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous. But after that, we get our introduction properly.
We go to Norway, and we get what I thought was really clever exposition of how everything we know about religion and gods is wrong, and it's all basically aliens, which is, you know... So basically, Tom Cruise narrates this movie and tells us all about Scientology. For want of a better term, that's what this movie is trying to do. It's trying to ground the idea of gods. It's trying to ground the idea that these stories that we've maybe heard before of like Norse mythology and things like that are actually in fact aliens that used to interact with our world a bit more. Really cool little bit in this though for later on down the line, our next episode actually. The first town you see in Norway is actually where Red Skull picks up the Tesseract.
Yeah. Tonsberg. That is the town at the beginning of Thor where the ice giants make their claim on the earth and mount this war right before Odin and the Asgardian army put a stop to it, really. It's quite an impressive scene. To say it was 2011.
No, mate, it's such a bad accent. No, that's what I'm saying. It's so good. Like, everything looked amazing. It looks breathtaking. That first battle scene, wow.
It actually reminded me slightly of Sin City. Now, hear me out.
Okay.
When the Asgardians and the Ice Giants clash, you see the silhouettes. You see a bit of colour, like, on the helmets and the Ice Giants' heads. But aside from that, it's quite dark. Mm. And it just looks grungy and gritty. And you feel like you're there almost.
I think that makes it a bit more real, you know, what you really are in a battleground. And this is the first time
in the depths with the soldiers being, you know, they are being stabbed. Like, you do see them, like,
this is probably comic book war. Yeah, yeah. This is, you know, this is the first time that we have seen war from the comic book pages on the big screen.
Yeah.
That's what we got to remind ourselves here. Like, when we're rewatching these, we're not seeing these for the first time now. We know what we know, but that was just so badass. Like,
it's quite visceral, really. And especially the moment where Odin appears through the beam of light with his army. Oh, fantastic. And the overhead shot of the two armies together,
showing how Odin lost his eye. Like, get so much within like the first 7 or 8 minutes of this movie. What then transpires on, you know, now that you've got the backstory of the peace between the two realms, what then happens is probably one of my least favourite moments of the movie.
Go.
Which is Marvel babies, Thor and baby Loki. I love Thor as adult Thor. Being all like, war, yes, let's drink a beer, yes, war, it's great. I hate the fact that it was like a bloody Disney movie.
Yeah.
And it
yeah,
is
yeah.
a Disney movie, but it was very much like, he's the shy, meek, sneaky one, and he's the big jock one. Like, it
here's
was.
Here's your hero, here's your villain.
At that age, you wouldn't have that defined in your personality yet.
Like, what would have been interesting to see is if they've been really
close.
Really close, but the exact opposites of each other.
Yeah.
And have then grown into the appearance.
Yeah, like, because we know that Loki is constantly trying to get Odin's approval. If he was like, war, that would have been quite nice.
Yeah.
Alternatively, they're brothers and they're growing up. It would have been really nice to have seen them play more.
Well, the thing is, so fast forward in a few years, in Thor Ragnarok, there's a great scene where Thor talks about Loki transforming into a snake. When Thor picks him up, he transforms back and stabs him.
Mm.
When looking at that kid that's portraying a young Loki, I don't see a kid that's about to stab somebody.
No,
do you know what I mean?
I see someone who is actually almost feeling a little bit trodden down. We're seeing Loki right now. Like,
yeah. That's...
We haven't seen Loki yet, but up until maybe like at the end of the first act of this movie, you honestly believe that Loki is just one of Thor's entourage. Things that we know now that you're like, he's guiding him, he's leading him. But basically, Loki's just Thor's brother.
To begin with, I thought it was going to be, oh, they're setting him up for the villain for the next film.
Mm.
Not straight away.
Yeah.
Like,
almost like they wanted him to evolve into a villain.
Yeah, rather than just plunge straight
in. He was there already. Like.
Yeah. Well, it worked. It didn't, you know, take anything away from the film, I thought.
Getting back to why I didn't like the Marvel babies,
Marvel babies.
Because what I wanted from that scene, because the very next scene you're getting in this movie is Thor, rock star Thor.
Yeah.
Like, hey, come and see my band, Thor. Like, he literally loves it. He's sapping up every little bit of adulation, every little bit of...
Well, it's when he's walking into the throne room and he's like...
He's about to be king!
He holds his fist up in the air with the hammer. That's pretty much like, love me, I'm a king, I'm a don, come on.
I wanted almost to not have this image of Thor being the jock before he was given the image of Thor being the jock.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like that Thor always throughout all of these movies, he said that he loved his brother so much, it would have been really nice. Not necessarily, it didn't bother me when I watched it at the time. It was after rewatching. Mm. I really wanted that connection there, but I didn't notice it. And that shows how forgettable that scene is. And yet, when you come back to it, why it sticks in your mind. Now, the reason why we're doing this is because a lot of shit happens in the first 15 minutes of this movie.
So much.
We kind of have had to change our structure slightly because it gets nerdy very quickly.
Yeah.
We've already been given 2/3 movies in this MCU, but this throne room scene, if you're a Marvel fan, like, you can watch this scene repeatedly 100 times and not catch everything that happens in this next 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So we've got Thor, rockstar Thor, swinging his dick around the throne room.
Big Dick Molnar.
Yeah, he fucking loves it. He's going in. He's about to be crowned king.
And the ice giants break in. They go to steal the casket. Odin catches on very quickly and has them wiped out by the destroyer.
Mm-hmm. However, like, great scene. You're like, boom, boom, boom. As a casual viewer of this at this time, you would have been like, that's awesome. He was going to be king. We see the treasure room.
Yeah, you go down the rabbit hole with this one.
When the ice giants break in, what you're seeing is basically little breadcrumbs for us on this journey. This is the first time you're seeing the Infinity Gauntlet. This is the first time you're seeing this first time you see the Orb of Agamotto. Not the Eye of Agamotto, but it's connecting it to that almost cosmic, mystical realm. It's tying the two together. This very, very early on establishes itself as it's space.
Yeah.
It's not like heaven. It's not these mythical ideas.
It's an alien planet. It's not a planet as we perceive normal planets to be, but it is.
But the clever thing it's done is basically made you go, what we think is magic is their science. Yeah. You went back and you took a fucking Zippo to a caveman and say, hey, look at this motherfucker. Like, he's gonna be like, oh my god, he's a wizard. Like, he's a goddamn wizard.
It's a wizard.
But yeah, so go in the throne room, watch this again and again and again and again and again and again. If you've caught up with the MCU, this is a feast.
It's definitely teasing the wider mythology of the MCU as a whole. The Infinity Gauntlet, that's a bit of an obvious one now. But like Agamotto, teasing Doctor Strange before we even knew we were going to get a Doctor Strange movie. But Eternal Flame, Thor Ragnarok.
This
is crazy.
Goes back to what we're saying, though. This is why, as a comic book fan, you can really love these movies. Because casual movie fans aren't, you know, you don't give a shit what they are. It's like a treasure room. You're not, you know, for you, it doesn't make any difference.
It's just decorations.
Yeah. It makes it look cooler.
Yeah, but for fans, treasure trove.
Yeah, they absolutely smashed it. Little introduction here. What is really cool as well is knowing what we know now about Ragnarok.
Yeah.
What is underneath them at that point? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that
is crazy.
It's really nice because we do revisit the treasure room quite a few times, and I love that. The other thing that I wanted to talk about in this first 5-10 minutes of this throne room scene is the fact that if you've read any Thor whatsoever, you know about Lady Sif and you know about the Warriors Three.
Yeah, man.
And they are here and they do not, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's right there. Boom! Like,
straight away, these are your supporting cast. Warriors Three. Shit up. Lovely.
Yeah, and they could have easily just left them out. They could have. Like, a certain degree, they could have left them out, but they didn't. They were like, his entourage are the Warriors Three.
Yeah, man.
And Sif. And there's that really cool part where he's like, Who backed you up and led you to glorious battle? You did. And then he goes to Sif and he's like, who naysayed that a beautiful woman could be the fiercest warrior?
And she's just like, I did.
And he's like, yes, but I supported you. And it's a very rare moment in this movie, and that Thor actually has a Thorism. Like, because it's not really until Avengers that we see that Thor is funny. Because you don't get it in this. Yeah, you see it a little bit in the first Avengers movie.
Yeah.
You do, it comes out. It completely reverts back in Dark World. Mm. And then you see it in...
You see it fully in Ragnarok.
You see it fully in Ragnarok, brilliant. But you definitely see it, you know, pretty much there in Age of Ultron as well. But, so it's really nice to see those moments.
Yeah. Now, I love seeing Thor mid-fight, using his hammer, lightning powers, it's great. It's a spectacle. And that's what Thor should be. He's this big bombastic character that, you know, commands your attention every time he's on the screen. And by and large, Chris Hemsworth nails that. The only thing I don't like about him is that that's all he has. I'm going to clarify that. He is, like I say, he's a large character. He does, you know, entertains, but there's no real character depth to him. There's a small scene later on between him and Jane Foster where he explains the tree of the universe, and that's the only time really that we see any depth to Thor. Aside from that, it's just, I'm gonna hit this.
Do you not think that's purposeful, though?
It definitely
is. Like, they wanted us to believe that he was the kind of Archie of the Marvel universe. Do you know what I mean? A jock with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Like, he has not got a bad bone in his body. The fight between him and Olaf, like,
God. Why are you like this?
Because essentially we went to an ice castle and we fought the giant snowman.
Hey, I mean, Marvel, you know, owned by Disney, give it a few years, there'll be a Frozen Thor crossover.
We're here now, yeah.
Yeah, Jotunheim,
and
spelt with a J.
Jotunheim. I'm looking at the world, I've seen Asgard, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've seen Jotunheim, it's bleak and it's desolate, but it's still beautiful.
Yeah.
Then I see fucking Ice Pig Dog. And
that is the moment I hate.
Oh my god, it's...
A lot of the ice giants are CGI. The fight itself is very CGI and it looks fine.
No, but there are parts in it that, like, proper Lord of the Rings... The beginning of this is very Lord of the Rings in its feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you get in the first, like, ice giants battle kind of thing, like...
It's cool.
It's very Lord of the Rings orcs battles, like, and there are real people dressed up. We've said it before, it's, you know, practical effects outweigh CGI.
Every time.
But when they bring... Why brought it in...
fucking ice dog. Just looks awful. I hate it.
And what it does as well is, because you've got those chase scenes where it's chasing the Warriors 3... It then highlights how bad the CGI landscape is.
Yeah.
Because
it makes everything worse.
Because, you know, you've got exploding bits here and stuff like that. It really makes that worse. It really took me out of the movie. Mm-hmm. It looked like that fucking Sky Dog thing from Avatar.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Do you know what I mean? It looked like his evil twin.
Yeah.
In terms of Thor, I didn't mind him being Rockstar. I didn't mind him being as shallow as a shower. Like, I didn't really... I didn't mind these things because I felt that that was really important to see where he grew. When I think about Phase 1, I will watch Iron Man 2 again and again. I will never watch Incredible Hulk. I will probably watch Captain America First Avenger on my deathbed. But that being said, this is one of those ones for me that... And the same with Dark World to a certain degree. The Dark World is a fucking mess, but we will get to that completely. For me, this is one that gets lost, and I think that that's unfair because when you watch it back, it's a really good movie. You don't get the payoff that you got with Tony Stark.
Tony Stark, you have the expectation that he's going to put on the suit and have a fight. With Thor, it's like, well, he's already got the powers. Yeah, he loses them, but because he's already lost them, you know he's going to get them back.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't that expectation... And it sort of loses the dramatic effect of him having the powers taken away. If this was the second movie and he'd had the powers taken away, then you've got some dramatic license.
I do think when Odin whispers to Mjolnir, like, you know...
Whomever
is worthy can wield the powers of Thor, yeah? And he throws it down. It's basically saying to you he's getting his powers back. Mm. It almost is like a spoiler alert moment, yeah? But what it does do from that point is lead you on to possibly the worst part of Thor 1 and Thor 2. And thank Jesus Christ that they ditched it for Ragnarok.
Yeah, man.
Which is Jane Foster.
Oh, God.
Because up until this point, we've had issues with the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
We've had issues with women being used purely to... push along the leading male character, and this has never been more prevalent than with Jane Foster.
I think the problem is with her, she is essentially an explainer. She is the person that explains to us the nature of the cosmic side of the MCU in relation to Earth. And it's all of her scenes are just exposition. It's like, oh, this is actually the Bifrost. And Einstein-Rosen Bridge is just the Bifrost. It's the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
Most fans will already know that. Obviously, for the wider audiences, it needs to be explained. That's fine. But all of her scenes are like that, and it's very derivative. It gets very annoying, and it's a shame for Natalie Portman.
Yeah, Natalie Portman is such an. If you look at her portrayal in V for Vendetta,
stunning.
you see almost like the eye-opening spiral of a character.
Yeah.
What we're dealing with here is a physicist, yeah, that has just discovered the presence of interconnected alien wormholes that have also led to an alien being falling to Earth, yeah? An attractive, very well musculated alien being. However, you never at any point feel like she's... Okay, as a woman who is obviously driven by a career, that's what we're led to believe.
Yep.
Where is the eureka moment? The other thing that really annoyed me as well is because when I was watching this, I was thinking about the Jane Foster of comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how she is so worthy.
She's so well written as well.
Yeah. That she became Thor.
She didn't become Lady Thor.
No,
She was Thor.
I can never in a million years imagine this whiny Disney princess of a character, because that's what we're dealing with here. Again, we're dealing with a Disney princess, meets an alien, falls in love with him, risks her life for him, all in the space of 2 days. She doesn't even know if he has a cock. She doesn't even know if she can have sex with him. Like,
he might be as smooth as the bonnet of a Porsche down there. We don't know.
He may look like Alan Rickman from Dogma. We do not know these things, okay? Thor was a jock.
Yep.
Thor battled his way around the Nine Realms, yeah? Are we to honestly believe that he didn't shag his way around the... Knowing the character of Thor, the drinking, warring, loving...
Are you telling me that him and Sif didn't...
Oh, come
on. You know, now, you know
Sif,
they fucked.
Sif, I... No, I disagree.
Nah, I think...
Sif is blatantly fuck you, Thor.
Nah, I reckon it was Sif being like, down. Come here, right now.
You see, I like to think that they're like they've got like a brother and sister relationship. Like,
well, almost... now you've just made me sound like a creep. Thanks, Dav.
Yeah, you're weird.
Dark World Frigga sort of points Thor in Sif's direction. That's all I'm saying.
I'm judging it based on purely where we are right now. But yeah, getting back to it, it's such a shame. You know, we had Pepper Potts and Natasha Romanoff in the last movie, really smacking it hard, really kind of going, hey, women are badass in Marvel.
Yeah, and on different sides. Business?
And do you know what? I really think that was down to Kenneth Branagh not getting Jane Foster.
Yeah.
And not getting the character. He saw the character Jane Foster. He saw, you know, that that she was this smart, intelligent person. But he never really understood that she was every right as worthy as Thor.
Yeah, but I think that also stems from Kenneth Branagh's experience.
Mm.
He's very much a Shakespearean actor. And I think he brings that to his directing style. Thor in itself is a very Shakespearean plot.
We are a very Shakespearean
Warren Brothers, you know, father troubles. Mm-hmm. And there's no room amongst that for a well-written love interest. There was depth to it and genuine attraction. It would have worked.
So when Thor became unworthy in Unworthy Thor, and he was all of a sudden stripped from his powers, I know there are a lot of comic book fans who are like, can't have a lady Thor. But for me, it made perfect sense.
Yeah, but let's go back to...
someone who is written well, Loki.
Loki.
Like, arguably the best villain we have in the MCU.
Yes.
When we talk about how the Marvel Cinematic Universe really lets down its villains, I think it's funny that the next two that we're talking about, Loki and Red Skull, are by far the best villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I mean, Loki had almost become a career-defining performance for Tom Hiddleston. I'm not saying he's not great in other things. He is. He became synonymous with the role.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's slightly overacted in places, he has such an interesting character arc that truly captivates you, even just as a general moviegoer, not as a comic book fan, because you see the tortured side of him. You see the almost heartbreak he has when he discovers he's an ice giant.
It's
awful. If you hadn't have found out he was an ice giant, he may not have gone down the route he went down.
Funny little tidbit here. The reason why he even came to Marvel's eye was actually he auditioned for Thor.
Yeah, the audition tape is pretty funny. He has he has long blonde hair. He's toned. He's a toned fella, but he's not the bulk of Chris Hemsworth to say the least. I'm glad how it turned out.
The reason why we're going to skip Loki a little bit here is because when we get to Avengers Assemble, the first team-up movie, we really wanted to explore the side of him here if we felt like the progression was there. So we're going to save him a little bit. Yep. All we think is he made a great villain in this. It was really good to have him use those things like the Destroyer to battle Thor without seeing him go one-on-one.
For 20 minutes fight scene. And it is changing up the villain being the same as the hero trope that we've talked about before.
And it was nice again to have the villain not be a world-ending scenario.
I mean, it's very a localized fight.
For Earth.
For Earth.
For Asgard, much bigger.
Yeah.
Thor takes place slightly before The Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Now we discover aliens, and that, you know, that the Earth is discovering aliens. So it makes sense that when we get to Iron Man 2, when Nick Fury's going, we need to talk about, you know, the Avengers initiative. Mm-hmm. It makes sense at that point, like, because they've just found an alien that can wield the power of thunder.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense now. That's a there's a piece. Do you know? Oh, a piece of candy. Like, it just drags you in. But in this, we're getting Coulson, and we're getting a lot of Coulson.
Yeah, he's pretty much supporting cast at this point, similar to how he was in Iron Man.
I find him so annoying.
Do you really?
When I watch his back, I found him so annoying. I don't, and I think it's because I've watched so much Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
That he has gone off on such a tangent in that, that now whenever I see him talk and his delivery, I just don't care. And it's such a shame, because when I rewatched Avengers, it made me, spoiler alert, it made me not care about his death. And
because
that's
because it's meaningless knowing what comes after.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, and
but that is Joss Whedon's fault. He wrote that in and then created Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But that's a whole other issue.
So we have we have the first appearance of Hawkeye.
Yes. Now, I actually loved this scene. I would actually say it's my favourite scene in the entire film.
Ooh.
Because it's Thor running through this research facility, and Hawkeye's above in a crane. First, he goes to grab for a sniper, and then reaches across for the bow.
Yeah.
And as soon as the hand goes for the bow, you're just like, oh yeah.
We know it's who
on.
You are, Jeremy.
It's on. And it's Thor just like mowing down through all these S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and getting to Mjolnir.
Do you not think that it's really rad as well, like, where we started off, he does look like a Black Ops agent.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And as we get through, I actually think that he has earned his place on the Avengers team. Everyone jokes about him. Mm. Hawkeye's got a crossbow. But he holds his own. And, like, he really does, throughout the movies, really gain his place there. What I really liked about this is that you're being introduced to Selvig and you're being introduced to Hawkeye. And they are basically your main plot devices in Avengers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You're being
so they have to be established quite well in this one for you to care in Avengers. And but it's just the fights that Thor has going through this research facility, because he's just a brawler, man.
Yeah.
He is just pounding down these dudes. It's the big guy that stops him. He's like, huh, you're big, fought bigger. And I was just like, my boy, my boy.
I just, that whole scene just, it does open up a question, but it's just such a nice scene to see Thor without his powers.
Yeah. Okay. It shows that he's still capable.
Yeah.
To a point.
However, and we are getting into spoiler territory here, so if you haven't seen Ragnarok yet, like, maybe skip forward.
If you haven't seen Ragnarok, what the fuck are you doing?
He fights the Hulk without Mjolnir. Yeah?
Yep.
That doesn't make sense with what happens in this movie.
Yeah.
In retrospect, him, and maybe you could argue it's a kind of Superman-esque thing, that maybe on Planet Hulk, he's more capable, maybe it's more like Asgard, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had this first time round, but coming back,
yeah.
It really did.
In Ragnarok, I think the only thing that that's a problem with that is that he didn't actually have his powers taken away from him. He just assumed it just came with the hammer.
Mm.
So if you want to look at it that way, I guess he never lost his powers, but he could still jump and still do all the...
You've got to argue, though, to a certain degree, because it is a plot point which does let... And it's very rare that this happens in the MCU, but okay, so let's just say Odin stripped him of his powers, and said, if you can will Mjolnir, then you can basically have your powers back. However, he knows what it's like to have no powers.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what it's like to be stripped. So that begs the question, when Hela destroys Mjolnir, why he's bothered?
Yeah.
Because he would jump and he'd be like, I can still jump. He would punch Hulk and it would hurt Hulk. And he'd be like, I can still punch. I've still got my powers. You don't have that same dramatic, I have to discover that it's inside moment.
Yeah.
Now, Ragnarok almost feels like a different version of this character, and that's cool, so we can kind of work, but on rewatch that really did kind of get me, because
really pulls you out of it,
doesn't it? I don't mind the first movie being like that, but that's got to imagine how different Ragnarok would have been if Thor was the same Thor as he was in Thor 1.
No thank you.
If he was completely pummeled by the Hulk, if he was completely outmatched, like, it would have been really exciting, but I get why they didn't choose to do that.
Yeah.
But moving forward, our boy Stan Lee.
Oh, there we go.
He is worthy, though. This is...
Yeah, of course he is.
So what's the Stan Lee cameo?
So the Stan Lee cameo actually ties back into the post-credits scene from Iron Man 2, where Coulson stumbles upon the crater that Mjolnir's left in the New Mexico desert. And it's a bunch of Americans having a bit of a get-together. They have a barbecue. They tie a chain around Mjolnir and attach it to a truck. The truck sets off and it pulls the back of the truck off. Because obviously the truck is not worthy of picking up Mjolnir. And Stan Lee reaches out and is like, did I get it?
It's
sorry,
brilliant.
Stan, you did not get it.
No, he didn't. But he is worthy and he would have picked up a hammer.
I would have loved if in Age of Ultron, if he'd have just picked up and like grabbed something from underneath it.
That would have been great.
Fantastic.
Kind of like how Vision did.
Yep.
That worked, but we left that out with Vision.
I'm just gonna ignore you ever brought that up. It annoys me.
This is a longer episode. Tell me your score. Sum it up.
Oh, 6.5. It's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable film. It's great to finally see Asgard. It's great to see a well-rounded-ish version of Thor on the big screen that isn't the really crappy 70s version. And, you know, it is a spectacle. It's an enjoyable flick. It doesn't have much depth to it. And Jane Foster is just fucking awful, man, honestly. What about yourself?
I think I'm going to give it 6.5 as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually, if we were going to the MCU way of titling movies now, I'd actually call this like Thor, the story of Loki, or Thor, Loki's rise, or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Because I felt like you got more depth from Loki than you did from Thor in this
it's
movie.
It's almost a villain movie than
yeah,
it is.
It really
a Thor
is.
Movie.
It really is more about Loki, and that's even more prevalent when you get to the first Avengers movie.
Yep.
This is a story, this is a story of Loki turning his back on Asgard, and this is a story of Loki realizing that if he wants something, he has to take it himself. It's not about Thor losing his powers. Mm. It's not about Thor learning to be worthy again. It's about Loki realizing that no matter how good he is, he never will be worthy. Mm. And that's what, I think that this is more of a Loki movie than it is a Thor movie.
Yeah.
It was really nice to finally see something a bit more fantastical. And I thought out of all of the Phase 1 films, this was the most difficult to nail. And I thought they did nail it for the most part. The reason why I'm giving it 6.5 is because there are certain parts of this that just don't match up to like Iron Man and Iron Man 2 in terms of story development.
And even just the dialogue itself. Mm. Dialogue is very clunky. It's very exposition-led.
Yeah.
There isn't the wittiness that Tony Stark
And I guess
has.
We needed that to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Definitely not the worst of the Thor movies.
No, but it's a great precursor into Avengers once you count the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
So it starts with Nick Fury meeting up with Eric Selvig to show him the Tesseract.
Yeah.
Which we learn becomes a very big source of power later on, but we don't know much about it right now. As Eric Selvig's looking at it, Loki appears in a reflection and says, "It's worth a look." And Selvig repeats the line.
It's one of my favourite post-credit scenes.
It's just a very character-driven moment, and it's great.
And it's something that hasn't really happened as much. Is that if you think about Iron Man 2,
mm-hmm.
Thor, mm-hmm. and Captain America, they are all directly leading into that Avengers
yeah.
movie. Whereas with Ultron, it's not quite Infinity War. We're getting tidbits from all areas. But this first phase,
it
you've got
directly.
Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. It's establishing why those three characters are going to meet each other.
Yeah.
That's been us.
That's been episode 4.
If you want to get in touch, you can tweet me at SwearboxDJ.
You can tweet me at Eamon Jacobs, or you can tweet us both at Heroes Direct.
With the hashtag Countdown to Infinity, send us any of your questions. We're going to try and keep them a little longer now because there's more to explore as we go on. But yeah, thanks for being with us. And next time we talk about Captain America, the First Avenger.
See you next episode.